What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everybody.
And today we have a special guest, actor, director, writer, Josh Rubin. How's it going, Josh?
It's going so well. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for taking the time to hang out with us. So many things to talk about. One of the big things, actually, is a new graphic novel that you have coming out soon called Darla. Looking forward to that. We actually got to check that out prior to this interview. So we're going to jump into that pretty soon. But before we do, this is the segment where we usually talk about our recommendations, things that we watch, you know, TV shows, films, stuff like that, anime. And we're not going to do that the same way this time because we have a special guest. So two movies I do want to recommend is The Werewolf Within. I saw that actually when it came out, and it's pretty dope. It's a fun horror-based whodunit. And then we also have A Wounded Fawn, which is on Shudder, I believe. And that's a solid film as well, starring Sarah Lind. I think I said her last name right, Sarah Lind. Mm-hmm. And obviously Josh. And that's a dope film. Your mileage might vary in terms of the weirdness that happens later on, but it's pretty solid. It reminds me a little bit of Mandy, which is another kind of surreal film. It starts off normal, then goes surreal. And so if you dig Mandy, you might dig this as well. So definitely go check that out on Shudder. But those are just my quick recommendations. Like I said, we typically do that, but we don't want to take up too much time from the interview. So there you go. There you go. So you can't say I didn't do it. You can't say I didn't do it. So yeah, again, thanks for, you know, hanging out with us. One of the things I wanted to get into was filmmaking. And how did that come about? Because I know we've had other directors on here before, and some of them said, you know, they went to school and they saw a particular film, and that's what kind of sparked, you know, their imagination and them wanting to get into this field. For you, was this something that you always wanted to do growing up, or was it something where it's like a single moment where you're like, okay, this is what I need to do going forward?
Oh man, that's a great question. Thank you for it. I mean, I always wanted to act first. I really knew that, like, when my parents would pop a VHS into the VHS player and I'd sit on the carpet and like watch, you know, whatever, anything from like An American Tale to stuff I shouldn't be watching, like RoboCop or
Nice
Cat's Eye or whatever. And my parents were like, he just shot that dude in the dick. Maybe you should turn that off. I wanted to act first. I just knew I wanted to be a part of whatever magic was happening in the TV. So it was always acting. It was like acting, all the way up throughout my mid-20s. And then I very quickly realized you had to be really lucky to be an actor. In fact, the only way I realized I could get acting gigs was by hiring myself. And so I found a production company with my buddy Sam, who now runs Dropout, College Humor Dropout, which I still do some shows for and stuff. And we just started making videos with our friends, you know, and that turned into College Humor noticing us. And us making videos for ourselves and then for the internet. And that turned into a commercial directing career for me. And then with movies, I just realized no one was going to give me $5, $10, even $2 million for my first movie. Although it's, you know, crazier things have happened for first time filmmakers. So right. I just decided to cash out, recklessly cash out my 401k or most of it from my time.
Oh, wow.
College Humor IAC. Yeah. Which is like a big tax penalty, which I haven't gotten yet, but I probably will, to get as like startup fund, you know, starter funds to do my first movie, which is basically like a play in a house. This movie Scare Me. And then that like went to Sundance and kind of blew up and pretty much immediately got me my opportunity Werewolves. Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, I mean,
I can't imagine.
That was kind of our next question, though, about pivoting into horror, and you kind of answered it in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I realized that horror was one of the, you know, the most accepting communities, and God forbid my first movie was awful. The horror community is at least willing to accept or give every filmmaker and every film, I think, a chance, and that's why I love it so much. You know, it's kind of like, I watched every damn thing as a kid, stuff I shouldn't have been, the, you know, stuff I was allowed to eventually. So I thought, okay, from a business standpoint, even horror is the way to go. Horror is, you know, where it's at. It continues to present itself as like the bulletproof genre, as it's been called. And that's why, you know, it's like, even up until today, as I'm trying to get financing off the ground. I mean, I announced a movie we're in the process of getting financing for with Jasmine Savoy Brown from Scream and Tatiana Maslany from She-Hulk and stuff. That's sort of a sci-fi thriller. But as we've been waiting, because I'm just the kind of person who can't sit still, I was like, well, well, we're waiting to get that going. Maybe I'll try and adapt this graphic novel, this screenplay that I once had, this really super, and try and get a graphic novel off the ground. It, you know, just kind of keep creating. And that was genre as well. You know, that was horror too.
Hmm. So that, what with, I know with comedy and horror, combining them is usually kind of challenging, you know, for, well, let me not quote any bad films, but, you know, for every, you know, A Cabin in the Woods and Werewolf Within, we have some not so good ones. And so that's kind of tricky. You know, if you lean too much into horror, it's kind of, you know, if you lean too much into comedy, it doesn't really work. What were some of the things that, or obstacles that you faced when directing, like, for instance, your first film, Scare Me, being that it was, you know, comedic as well as horror?
Yeah, I mean, it's all casting. It's all about the casting. Like, Sam Richardson informs Werewolves Within in tone in a way that Jonathan Majors or William Jackson Harper would have informed it in a different way. Your casting informs your tone, whether you intend it to or not. In the case of Werewolves, we were like, who are the best people we know who are down to like go for this wild ride? We were so lucky to have all of the cast that we did. But balancing the tone has everything to do with getting a cast that doesn't get caught trying to be funny and that can play fear for real, which is something that Sam can do, and Harvey Guillen and Milana, Aya Cash. They are inherently funny, but they're also really good actors. So if you introduce the threat, they could play the threat. They could play threatened just as well as, you know, all the other good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So it, I think that's a lot, you know, people ask me, it's like, how do you balance it? It's like, you know, treat the scary stuff, you know, treat it scary. And when it comes to the funny stuff, just don't lean on it too hard. Like, cast funny people, cast people that are just inherently funny, have comedy in their bones, which is a little bit about how I've gotten as far as I have and why I think us comedic minded filmmakers, like, I'm not going to dare put myself in the same position as like John Krasinski or Jordan Peele or Zach Kreger, but they all came from comedy. There's a reason for it. We also need more women filmmakers that, whether they came from comedy or not, should be referenced. Like, Karin Kusama doesn't have a comedic background. She's one of my favorite genre directors. But Jennifer's Body, if you watch Jennifer's Body, she doesn't lean too much into the humor, but it's sickly humorous.
Right.
And super dark, and she balances it really well. So I had to include Karin in there because she rules. But yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mixing comedy, I always think, one of the reasons why I think horror movies that are good that have comedic backgrounds or comedic actors or comedic writers is because the amount of intelligence it takes to pull off comedy kind of translates. And that's how I have always looked at it. I feel like people who are very funny have an intelligence level that kind of exceeds regularness. That translates into being able to write for horror. I think that's where the horror ends up being a better movie instead of kind of like the typical horror where you're like, yeah, that would never happen.
Yeah, that's well said. I think there's this thing about the comedic minded, I don't know, filmmaker or just person. We're observational. We clock quirks and weird behaviors and obnoxious behaviors. Mm-hmm. You look at a movie like, you know, A Barbarian, for example, and you have, I think it's Georgia King played the lead opposite Justin Long. You have, you know, Georgia King's character acting, you know, freaked out about this basement situation, and it's terrifying, and there's very slight humor to it, slight humorous tenor to it, and then you have Justin Long come in as this kind of douchebag
right?
you know, sees the scary basement as a monetary opportunity for him to get more money for his real estate. And it's a true observation, mm-hmm. and you kind of can imagine that some dude like that would just see it as a financial opportunity. Just that slight comedic observation based in truth makes it all the more kind of scary, because you're watching both of these characters walk into this dangerous place and you're like, oh God, I hope, you know, nothing happens.
Yeah. Agreed. Since we were just talking about Werewolves Within, how did that idea come about? Did you play the video game? Did you play the Ubisoft game?
I hadn't heard of the video game really until I got the opportunity to direct the movie. Mm-hmm. I read the script. It was sent to me via Vanishing Angle. They were our producing partners. They had actually just done another werewolf movie called The Wolf of Snow Hollow, which is great.
Yeah.
It was part of Ubisoft's women's fellowship program for film and television. So Mishna Wolf, our writer, last name Wolf, by the way.
nice.
She wrote the script. Yeah, it's just like on brand, right? She just took the IP and was tasked to just write essentially whatever she wanted. Find a story you like that could be based on this game, even if loosely. And she did. She found this very The Thing type vibe to it, and that's what I responded to. That's what we all did. It was like, wow, it's truly like a fun whodunit, you know. Reminded me a little bit of Clue and a little bit of like Arachnophobia and a little bit of The Thing and that, you know, that kind of world. So yeah, I just fell for it immediately. So that's how it came to me, and I did some revisions on it, but it was Mishna's brilliant script that made it possible.
That's awesome. Yeah. So with this, you have gotten your start with the college humor, and I believe you did some television first before going into the film and everything, and then doing directing as well as starring in films. Which role did you like better, being the director, being the actor? What did you learn as an actor that maybe even helped being as a director and vice versa?
Sure. Sure. I mean, the thing that helped being an actor, just in my directing career, is just how to talk to actors. Mm-hmm. And I have to check in with myself and realize how I like to be spoken to as a performer too, when I'm being directed. And that's why I'm constantly performing. I don't want to shut it out. You know, people like, one of my favorite filmmaker performers even is Lee Whannell, who still will show up and act and stuff, but he's mostly kind of turned that world off. I think it's really valuable to keep acting, to keep performing, so that you get, at least for me, to clock new filmmakers, what works, what doesn't work, even turns of phrase, how to talk to your crew, like secrets, you know. And I did that right through Wounded Fawn. I had the pleasure of watching Travis Stevens like commandeer his crew, and you know, I got to watch him watch me, deal with him, deal with me, and that's all stuff I'll take and calibrate as I continue directing. I hated directing at first. I used to be in a partnership directing commercials, and I felt so in over my head and felt like I was trying too hard. It's also, I started in commercials, started in the ad world where everyone's like, you know, chest boasting, and the most important thing in the world is like what kitty litter commercial they're all there to do, and it's like a total soul sucking nightmare. It's a horror movie in and of itself. I should probably set a movie that takes place during a commercial shoot for, you know, some pet food or whatever. But I love it now, because eventually you get to that point where your taste catches up to your skill level. A big piece of it is like how comfortable we feel. It's like the older we get, it's like one of the advantages to the older we get. It's like you put up your boundaries, or you know when to say no, or you know what to ask for. It's been a big learning lesson for me on all my sets, you know? And it's a fun, like, overlap Venn diagram, being a performer, talking to other performers as a filmmaker who wants to cultivate like a good vibe and is also still learning.
That reminds me of like, and just being a big fan of like all TV, but you know, like if I go all the way back to like the Dick Van Dyke Show, and how, you know, Rob's boss was actually the writer or head writer of the show, but he would actually appear as the boss in the show, or actually other, he would be other characters as well. Mm-hmm. You know, because for a long time they didn't show his face, so it would be kind of like they'll interact with him, you just hear his voice. And then eventually they would show him as like a painter or someone else, and it would be the same guy, but just playing different roles within the same TV show. But he actually, the show is actually based on his life, not Dick Van Dyke's life.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. And I always thought that was an interesting thing that he didn't just direct or write. He actually got in and hung out and, yeah, you know, acted with everybody else. So that's really cool that you mentioned that. So with going from, you know, TV to film and now film to graphic novels, what led to the creation of Darla, and why a graphic novel as opposed to another film?
Well, that's a great question. I tried to get the movie off the ground for a little bit. It's a weird one, as I'm sure you've
heard. Right.
this is like, and I still, you are the first fresh eyes, truly, next to maybe a friend who read an earlier version of it that was like, I don't know if it's quite there yet. You got to keep cutting stuff and working with it. It's a totally new thing for me, and that's why it's so scary. It's a new vulnerable thing to be like, yeah, Mr. Movie Man. Then to be like, ooh, and I'm going to go into this new kind of platform. Invader has been so wonderful, and so is my artist and everything. But I tried to get the movie off the ground, and then I was like, you know what? I'm sitting on this IP, as they call it, this intellectual property. I've got a few scripts like this, and I was just kind of thinking, why don't I spend far less money paying this writer from the Midwest who is so rawly talented, Brianna Tippetts, who's been self-generating and self-publishing her own work. What if I just like follow this artist whose work I love and kind of be like, would you like to collaborate? Because we had been kind of talking on Instagram and everything else. And then maybe if we do that, if we put this comic out, I mean, this is just the preview of it, but if we put the book out into the world, maybe someone will want to adapt it. Maybe there's some better, more talented creator or creative team. Maybe there's like a women-led creative team that will kind of see this as their moment to go, like, ooh, let's make something that's like freaky about, you know, I don't know, this kind of this irritable small town unusual woman. You know, so right. Originally when I was talking about doing the movie, I was talking about, like, you know, they were in the College Humor days. I was like, ooh, I'll wear the prosthetics and I'll play her and I'll also direct it and it'll be like super weird and make it my like Yorgos Lanthimos moment. And now I think you kind of outgrow what that, you know, you outgrow what you want to do with the different things that, you know, you want to create in your life. And I'm to the point now where I'm like, oh, I think I'd like to hand that off and see what someone would do with it. And if they can pull it off, because I still don't know if I've pulled this off, you know, it remains to be seen.
Right.
But yeah, so that's essentially why. And also I've always just I love hard media books. I printed a Scare Me script and had it commissioned an artist, Henry Gonzalez, do some original art for it. And I just love tactile stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think one of my, this is probably more of a personal question, but I like how you kind of are going, you're explaining the process that you go through with this. Like, you have an idea and you're like, you know what, I don't have the money or I don't have the resources or whatnot to maybe do this. I'm going to reach out to somebody else. Obviously, because you've been, you know, acting and you've been in the field, you have those connections. But maybe for people who don't, how do they go about making, you know, getting those resources to say, I have a wonderful idea, I have this great thing. You know, just making sure that they can find somebody to kind of get them to the success, especially if they know they don't have the funds, they don't have a writer, they don't have an artist.
Yeah. I mean, this is the wonderful thing about that world. Like, I could rush to I'd have to find it. It's somewhere on my bookshelf, but like, there are some comics that are just images. That if any one of us who had an imagination, you know, even a fraction like my dumb imagination, you know, could talk to an artist that they love or reach out to someone on Twitter, which is essentially what I did, or Brianna, you follow someone. And a lot of these artists are, you know, it's a struggle. Like, even some of my favorite authors have side hustles. You know, I don't just do one thing. If I'm not acting, I'm writing. If I'm not writing, I'm hopefully directing. And then if nothing's happening, I'll try and self-generate something else to put it out in one of these kind of forms. So what I did was sort of say, rather than spending money that I don't have, $5, $10, $15,000 on a short film and hope that it goes to a festival and hope and hope and hope, you can spend $200, $300, $600 on making something that's 8 pages, on making something that's 6 pages, and getting someone's imagination. So it's you're paying an artist whose work you love, even if it's not a full book, even if you want to spend less money and go like, hey, I love your art. What if I gave you X amount I feel comfortable with that I've been saving up to just do some character art? And then I can own that character art, you know, we can own it together. And then we're like, then we have a unit. Now we're generating something. Now we're creating something. Or you could draw something, even like me. I'm a terrible illustrator, but you could hand it to him and say, here's this weird devil bear character. Can you do something with this? Or here's, I just have this short story idea. Once you start transferring your imagination in any medium, whether it's with a partner or not, you are now sitting on intellectual property. You put that out into the world. Like right now, short stories are getting optioned left and right. And that's another thing I'm looking into, is like, ooh, is there a short story? Is there some old idea collecting cobwebs that I could just not spend any money on and put out into the world? The risk you have by doing that is if you just tweet it or put it on Reddit, anybody could, you know, whatever, take it, capitalize on it, what have you. But the process for me was, I saw Breonna Tippett's work somehow on Instagram. I reached out and said, I love your work. Can I buy one of your books? She self-published 2 or 3 things. She sent me stickers. She sent me fan art from some movies.
Nice.
I sent him this beautiful Wounded Fawn art. And I said, like, I have this screenplay. I know this is taboo in the world of graphic novels. So first of all, this book was way too wordy, even wordier than it is now. Like bubbles, chat bubbles, like filling pages when it should just be, as Invader graciously has guided me, mostly images. These images should like wash over you. You should feel the process. I reached out to Bree and I was like, if I gave you this screenplay, could you just, and told you, here's some money, go crazy, do literally whatever you want. And then you get to be like, ooh, I'm in business with the werewolves guy. And then I get to be like, ooh, I'm in business with this rad new artist. Let's go into business together. That's kind of what I did. Mm-hmm. And it's so much less money than let's get 25 people together or even 5 people together and make a short and go shoot in the rain and do this and that, which is what I love to do. But if I could also do this,
right?
Even though there's not a lot of money in comic books, but maybe Marvel will want to make Darla. that's what the process is. He has the ability to depress you. So we'll just see. I can't not do one thing. And if there's a way to support any artist, even if it's just like mildly monetarily, it's like, yeah, I don't want to keep doing it. I want to keep doing it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
With this, considering it's a new medium for you, was there any special difficulties in that? Were you able to, you know, seek out advice from folks who have already been in this field and they kind of help guide you? I know you mentioned Invader kind of mentioned that, you know, you should cut down on some of the dialogue and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How else did they kind of help you in that regard?
That was a big one. I mean, they've just been Mike Perkins and Kevin Miller, who I've actually known for a long time in my world as a commercial director, in my past life as a commercial director. It was a combination of showing me, like opening up my world to comic books, certainly that they were producing. It's all not underground comic books, but they're all like super original. They're not, it's not DC or Marvel. It's like a little more underground. And that's why I love it. It's more like GarageBand. It's a small biz, but they understand the culture of comic books and of graphic novels. The biggest thing was just that it should be more about the images and more about perspective and more of a visceral experience, almost a lot like film, actually. You know, directors could take quite well to it. And I used to draw a lot as a kid. So that was really the biggest thing. It was like, you know, less dialogue, more imagery. Full page imagery, feel it like there are these almost ad breaks in the book itself that you've seen, and they almost serve as like a little breather or a little chapter break. And Brianna so brilliantly had made a few anyway, a Halloween mask door, a haunted phone, what have you. And Mike was the one to be like, oh yeah, all day, more of that. Let's see just a full page of just disgusting water. If there's this kind of backstory about fracking in the small town Darla's from, let's just see a pipe spitting out just gross water into a reservoir, so that you can just see the image and let it affect you, just as photography would, just as a creepy close up, just as a funky wide, whatever. So that's been a really kind of amazing part of it. Is just be like, yeah, you know, tapping into what I love about letting image books, graphic novels wash over me. It's just like looking at a great image from some great angle. Even though this is a little more like kind of a dialogue driven, you know, weirdo story.
Yeah, it reminded me. So yeah, like I said before, we got to check it out, and it reminded me of, or at least the treatment, like the artwork, and like you were saying, the ads. It reminds me of the EC comics back in the day. So by back in the day, I mean like 1950s Tales from the Crypt, or you know what the film The Creep Show was based off of. Those type of books from way back in the day. Was that the type of vibe you wanted to go with Darla, or this kind of was like a happy accident type of thing?
It was kind of an accident, although I think that's what I responded to inadvertently in Brianna's work, in Bree Tippett's work, was, oh, there's something kind of like gruesome and jagged and wicked about it. And I think when I look back at like, oh, like amazing tales and Tales from the Crypt and the whole EC world, I think that's what I pulled from, maybe one of my earlier inspirations just as a horror fan, even before I watched Nightmare on Elm Street. That's probably, and certainly watching the movie Creepshow, that is a feeling, that imagery, that aesthetic is definitely something that stuck with me. So I think there's something that I see in Bree's work that touches on that like early Josh horror loving thing, the way that like the work of Clive Barker on film and in books kind of does as well. So thank you for saying that. That's a big compliment for sure.
Awesome.
So Darla does have like a political slant to it. And sometimes that could lead to negative responses from certain toxic people on the internet.
So yes.
Were you concerned with any of that in the creation process? And were there any topics that you thought were too controversial to put in the graphic novel?
Yeah, it went even further in the movie. Like she was nasty. She was like very racist, very, very nasty to kids, very nasty to very, like even more violent, even more scary. I was like, maybe it's a little too, but don't get me wrong. Like I wrote like, Darla, the movie poured out of me when Trump got elected. And there was actually an article about a woman who identified with this new character who was running the country. It more reminded me of what The Dead Zone was, because it was very similar to a Stephen King story about a guy who was angling for the president, who was, for all intents and purposes, like a serial killer.
Right.
And everyone was just like, wow, he's so great. And I combined that kind of that. And that's an unfortunate, sick fact about the country. And and it's like, hopefully without like politicizing it too much, we are toxifying ourselves with what we put in our bodies and what we watch on TV. And there's like, you know, this cult of like politicians that people are involved with that are just like, no, trust me, go be violent. And this is the story of like one of the sadder, more unfortunate cases in my mind, with a kind of Stephen King sort of spin to it. And so my hope is that in doing it as a book, it's a little more impactful and yet also a bit more squirmy. And then if there are conversations and, you know, toxicity that pops up, it's like that's what art is. It's like, it's gotta drop some discomfort. Boy, does she not like, and like net out well. This is not about
right.
Some Captain America type person. But hey, this conversation, it might be very much a prerequisite to what could be a really rude awakening for old Joshy Rude. Because it's you know, it's a lot, but it's also kind of unfortunately based on real people. A lot of real people I grew up with who again didn't have like the best outcome, you know. So I'm extremely curious how it will net out, and hopefully it won't end me. Right. He's been canceled. He's now a member of the Deplorables Ball.
No, it's definitely interesting, and I think there were parts where I think early on I was a little worried about where things could go. Like for instance, on the show a while back, I spoke about the show, the Amazon show, They, and how the main antagonist was essentially like this evil spirit that was racist, and the show made it kind of seem like that particular character or racist spirit caused everyone else to be, you know, evil, as opposed to them just being bad people. And it was kind of like excusing their behavior. With Darla, I was concerned about that similar thing happening early on. And as reading through it, though, thankfully that wasn't the case. Just let everybody know that's not the case. So my question was, though, was there a conscious effort to make sure that the supernatural elements didn't excuse away, some of the more problematic views and actions of certain characters?
If I'm understanding that question correctly, so can you rephrase it just in regards to the supernatural?
So like, and you know, not to spoil it, but Darla is, you know, she had an accident and she's seeing things. That's, you know, something that's on the Kickstarter. Yeah. But at the same time, there are things that come up that she's done or may have said or bumped, you know, her interactions with people. And so my concern was, her interactions, was this going to be something where she could potentially blame on the things that she's seeing, or is this is the things that she's seeing is pushing her true colors forward? You know, it's two different things. Cause in one hand, the character can be like, well, I'm actually a good person. This thing is making me do these things, versus, well, I'm kind of a bad person, but I've kept it, closeted. And now this is kind of showing everybody how I really am, you know, if that makes sense.
She's being exposed. Because if you there, you know, without giving anything away, there is a rekindling with a relative who has pushed her away for a reason, and who has a physical expression of that, you know, this like truly like left a scar because of this person. She was never really good. And I'd like to think that the haunting and her ultimate demise is like, well, that's the life lesson and message you leave behind. It's not like an incredibly positive one. Like there was a slightly more kind of heartfelt ending, and it's like, no, let's go for it a little bit. Like the ending last couple of pages. I don't know. I hope that it doesn't net out with too sour of a feeling and, you know, in mouths. It's just like, oh, it just, you know, yeah, I don't even think I could pick it up again or like kind of revisit it. I hope it leaves things kind of open-ended in regards to the supernatural, but she never started as like a great person. But it's also kind of like, oh man, it's such a sad, unfortunate truth about some of the small town, the existence of small town folks, especially people I went to school with, like in far upstate New York. There are people that will never know what walking around a city is like. They only know their bubble. And within the bubble, like bad shit can fester. Bad perspectives can fester. So this is the thing that I really don't know. I really don't know, you know, how it will sort of be perceived, and hopefully people kind of go like, God, is this just like some new evil Bible? Did Josh just inadvertently make it for creepy old women?
Are you Well, to piggyback off of that, then, being that this is, you know, in parts based on actual people that you might have come in contact with, are you worried about them potentially seeing themselves in Darla?
A piece of me kind of hope that they do. And that that makes them think twice about, like, yeah, I think so. Because interacting with these types of personalities growing up, and even sometimes still if I'll go back home or today, or even the people we see on the internet, it's like, I feel sad for them because they don't know better. But it's a shame that they don't know better. There's a lot of anger that comes up in me and people that can't catch up with the times. And so part of this is like almost like what EC comic stories were. There was often a protagonist in those stories, the anti-hero. It usually was a woman, a vixen often, and those types of stories who would do something, you know, cheat on her husband and some awful thing would happen. But it normally was a female protagonist, anti-hero, who dabbled in some bad shit and bad shit happened to them. So I'd like to think that it will net out, that folks will see it and go like, man, I should be like less of a, or it's like, if I do have my accident, if I do have my big day and I get time to reflect, that it doesn't kind of turn me into a, you know, into a Darla, but who knows? I'll be dragged.
I was just thinking when you were saying how, you know, she's not going to get, like, the redemption isn't there. I, for some reason, my mind just kept going to, like, Tolkien and Lobelia Sackville Baggins and her little redemption. You know, like, she gets to redeem herself slightly. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
But it can't be, you know, you can't have that ring.
No.
You know, you can't have it all. Not,
you can't.
Not in
this not that kind of story. Yeah. Not what we're going for here. You launched the Kickstarter for Darla with Invader. And so how did your relationship with them come about and how helpful have they been? I know you've mentioned a little bit like how good they've been with helping with the comic, but.
Yeah, I mean, just again, with just aesthetically, how to make the best product. There was so much dialogue. There were so many pages that were cut out and so many different, like, so much exposition to in lettering that we just nixed so that we could allow the image to just be. There were some spots where there were giant chat bubbles that there was headroom left for. And I just said, Brie, rather than, like, redrawing a whole thing, let's take out – what if you take out some of these text bubbles and just show – this character being alone, or show this character not interacting with her husband. She has a husband in it. We want this also to be about like the toxic nature of isolation. So there were moments where she'd be addressing her husband and he would respond to her and they were like, no, like let's just take him out of her panel in her close up, even if you feel him a little bit, take him out. Say, Joe, what are you doing? Joe, ? And not include his answer. Have him be sleeping most of the time. Have him be truly unavailable. And even he wakes up to the horror of what she is and who she really is as he's kind of been going through his own, you know, awakening.
So reading Darla, and early on I was, you know, like I was saying, I was trying to figure out what was going on, what was the secret, and then certain things started to change and twist and turn. And there's a point where I think in the comic where, or the graphic novel where I'm like, wait, what exactly is happening right now? And then there's an ad. And I swear it's placed in a perfect spot because it messed everything up for me in a sense that I'm engaged now. And I'm like, I'm going through the pages. And then there's an ad. I'm like, no, this is not a time for commercial break. Go back to what just happened, because what is happening here? You know, seeing the comic, you know, and granted, you know, you just got the physical copy there. What were some of your emotions going through the comic yourself and reading it, being that you wrote it, but then also experiencing it kind of for the first time? You know, did you have the same type of, you know, like, oh, this is getting good, but I know where it's going. But at the same time, to see it physically as opposed to in my head, or, you know what I mean? Like, was there a different type of feeling with actually seeing it?
That's the thing that it's reminded me a lot of the process of screenwriting. And I wonder if this is the case for you both, if you know, you transfer something from a screen to a printout, if there is a process for that, where it's like, if you are writing something, it's the same kind of feeling. I catch stuff when I hold something physically, if I'm writing and I print it out, or versus when I print it out, I'll catch all the mistakes that for some reason won't present themselves when I'm like seeing them on a screen. So that was part of an interesting process for me. And why I realized why Invader, like Tess, you were asking, like, what was it like to work with them? And part of that process was them adding those commercial breaks, I think, knowing what they, how they would elicit an anxiousness in the reader to make them go like, what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, wait, no, I want to stay in it. I wouldn't have thought that. That never really occurred to me in kind of reading. I was like, oh, I'm going to give Bree the screenplay to adapt and that'll be it. But it was like, no. Now you have this physical thing you're holding the movie, you're holding the ride, you're holding the EC comic. You have to put your readers kind of through it. It's just, again, it's something I wouldn't have thought of, to add those full kind of ad breaks, or what we call like spooky pages. It's like a full image of, you know, a CAT scan or you know, a freaky looking house or whatever. So yeah, holding it, like the emotions of it was like, yeah, there's a bit of intrigue too. And then I'll catch things like, man, there's like way too many chat bubbles here, like way too many pieces of dialogue. It's like, again, you know, we're pulling stuff out, and there's still, it dances that line a tiny bit, but I think it's about as good as at least like, you know, number one can be. And hopefully I'll keep learning as I, you know, as a power head making these sorts of weird books.
So is Darla going to be, is this potential for an anthology type of thing? Well, if it's successful, obviously, but anthology type of thing, because I think her story kind of ends. So like, is there something where it's like, you know, kind of like EC, where, you know, you don't have just one, you know, central character. It's like several characters over several different stories. Is that something where, you know, we can potentially go back to this town and follow up with somebody else later on, that sort of thing?
It's funny you mentioned the town. You know, I won't revisit this character. I think I've kind of gotten out that demon. But I do have, like, even from Scare Me a little bit, and a little bit of like the world of Werewolves Within, there is a small town through line. I've been calling it in some of my writing Darryl County, and sometimes I call it Corvus County. There is a town kind of overlap. It's like, you know, for lack of a better comp, like J.J. Abrams using Slusho. It's, yeah, like, there's this thing that repeats. So I think like the county will repeat in my work. Like there's a movie right now, kind of a secret lower budget thing I'm trying to get made, that is in this town. That's a very different situation, like wholly different. But I think because I was so affected by and had my tough times and my high times, literally and figuratively, in the town I grew up in, like in these small, you know, the small town, I think it'll kind of keep popping up to a degree. But I love that you're thinking of that, or at least mentioning like an anthology, because I enjoy that idea. I think it's more about like, yeah, what are the other like messed up things that can happen in this sort of this small town world, or this, you know, county. This will probably be, I believe, the most political of the work I'll do. I never really want to write anything preachy or political, but this poured out of me at such a time when I was so upset, as we all kind of were. But you look back, I mean, this is just as equally inspired by that time as it was by Requiem for a Dream, you know, Ellen Burstyn talking to her television, as it was by The Dead Zone, like as it was by the corrupt politicians of, you know, times past, and the people who followed them, you know, cult leaders and all that creepy stuff.
No, it's definitely creepy, especially some of the shots of the, or the images, and this sticks out with me because I'm an illustrator. So the where it's, there's no talking and it's just a long shot or multiple breaks of a character going through something. And I was like, this is really like the way they do the colors, the mood, and the line work in, because it changes slightly in certain segments. I'm trying to say it without saying certain things, but in certain segments, the line work is different. And I noticed it and I was like, oh, this is putting me in a different type of space where I've been reading like horror comics for forever. And so I kind of don't get in that space anymore. Like right now I'm reading the Uzumaki, the Ito books, the Spirals. And his books are kind of up there, but for the most part, it's like, all right, this is cool. But there's points where I'm like, oh, this is really creepy. Like if I just sit in this page, I'm like, oh, this doesn't. I feel away. I don't feel safe in this area. So I think that she did a really good job with a lot of those images. So salute to you guys.
Yeah. Salute to you guys. That's all, Brie. I mean, there's sometimes. This is another testament to Invader. As I was like, is there anything we need to be looking out for the art? Because Brie hand drew this whole thing. I mean, hand drew. There's very little digital anything. And Mike Perkins was the one to be like, no. Any imperfection, it's like lean into that. There's something about the quality of that. It's a popular phenomenon. The imperfection, the character of it all. It's like, you know what? That's right. She couldn't be more imperfect. The town couldn't be more imperfect. The situation the town's in couldn't be more imperfect. Without calling it a flaw, like embracing those, you know, that asymmetry was something that they were passionate about. And they were like keep all the character in there. I was like, okay, yeah, hell yeah. Like that sounds amazing. We'll do.
Awesome. All right, Tess, I think you got, is it almost time for bonus questions?
Is it time for bonus questions? Is it time to shoot the shit?
I think so. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Shoot the shit round. This is just fun. And I don't have that many, but it's kind of rapid fire. You just say whatever you want. We don't care. You just answer and just, it is what it is because that's what we do here. We just shoot the shit. So.
I love shooting the shit.
We've been talking about horror. Favorite horror movie?
Oh man. Today, Nightbreed, Clive Barker.
Today.
Oh, it's different. It's like I was gonna be like Jaws, and then I'd be like, well, you know, we've done that before.
Go Sharks. I'm Team Shark Man. Have you seen what the killer whales are doing lately? These orcas are out of control.
No. In the world?
Or killer whales are just out here murdering sharks, just murking sharks in the ocean for no reason. I'm just.
Oh yeah. I'm here for it. I mean, I want to protect all marine life, but like I want to see it. Well, that's natural.
Okay.
Anyway, back on topic. I said shoot the shit. That's literally what we do. We're just ADHD.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I'm ready. I'm into it.
Okay. So favorite director or director to work with or anybody.
Lee Whannell.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, today Lee Whannell. I mean, yesterday Karin Kusama. The day before that Spielberg. I let's go with Lee Whannell today. I brought him up, and I was like, you know what? I like Lee. Awesome. I like too many. I like Karin, Taika. But let's say Lee today.
Awesome.
All right. So, DC or Marvel? As if you have to like one.
DC.
Hey.
DC? Ah.
My bestie Sam would be right there with you. Oh my God, Marvel's stupid. DC's. Hey.
I'm not talking about these movies. It's like going back, way back. It's just, I got too many.
Comics.
DC went dark. DC did, like, Riddler was dark. Batman was dark. Mm-hmm. Like, Batman Year One, Batman everything. Yeah.
That makes sense. I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah, not maybe not too terribly recently, although Joker was pretty cool.
Which I still haven't watched. That's
you've gotta watch. Well you probably should.
I have problems, so I can't always.
Facts. Facts.
My issues. Favorite anime.
Oh man. Oh my gosh. I have not seen, and I love, I mean, Ghost in the Shell, I mean, it's like, so what I've seen of Ghost in the Shell is phenom. What was it that I used to watch? Oh, it doesn't count. MTV's Oddities is not anime, but that style was about the most anime I used to watch. But Ghost in the Shell, what I've seen of Ghost in the Shell is just like crazy. I need to watch more. I need your recos.
You need our recos.
Oh, we got you.
Top five. Yeah.
Okay.
We got you. Especially horror anime. Yeah. There's a ton of horror anime that I enjoy that I could send your way. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
We'll do that.
Yeah. Please.
Favorite fictional universe?
Oh. Derry. Stephen King's Derry. Stephen King, the world of Stephen, the universe of Stephen King, like everything happened in Derry. You got It happened in Derry, Christine happened in Derry. That's, you know, definitely some Darla inspo in there. Yeah.
That's solid.
That is a rough place to visit, man. I swear.
I know, truly, truly horrific. Yeah. Andy Muschietti's version of it in It was just like, oh.
It's, yes.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
It's rough, but it is my fave.
Is it because of the clowns?
You'll beat the clown up in the sewer. You'll beat it up, Tess.
Yeah, I don't do clowns. And just last rando question, but horror or dark fantasy?
Oh, horror. I know. I was a dark fantasy dude. I mean, Dark Crystal was probably my first dark fantasy, Crystal. But Dark Crystal.
That was the best.
But horror. Yeah. I don't think I could watch it now. I think that would freak me out more than like any horror.
Oh, really?
Watching Puppet Goblins. Truly. I don't think I could. I think I made it 5 minutes through, maybe 10, 20 minutes through, you know, when it's in my childhood. Now probably I wouldn't make it further past that. But then again, I probably couldn't watch Pinocchio the same way as opposed to like me watching like Smile today.
Oh, goodness. Smile's great.
Yeah,
that was a good film.
Yeah,
I never saw that.
don't. Okay, so
yeah, I'm not allowed.
Tess
to
isn't movies. A horror person.
Yeah,
I'm getting the sense that Tess is a dark fantasy.
I'm a dark fantasy girl. We had this conversation last week about the differences. Dark fantasy, horror. I love dark fantasy. I'm not typically scared. It's magic. There's all kinds of stuff that I know will never happen. Horror,
right?
I am self-proclaimant of my mental health issues, and I don't need to be messed up in the head. I don't need to like turn the corner and see the little kid from Orphan with the burlap bag on. I don't need it.
Yeah. I don't need that in my life. But you would walk into like the what is it called? Like in Fraggle Rock, like the tunnel of terror. Or like the trouble tunnel, and you'd be like, "I'm fine,
I'm good."
No, yeah, good. It's puppets. It's
a little carrot car. I'm good. Like, yeah, I mean, I might get a little freaked out because something happened too quickly. But okay, so side note: after my concussion, I have like some vision changes, and I don't process that quickly anymore. And I just see stuff that's not really there, and. So I can't put myself in a situation where I am seeing something that's not real. We've had this conversation.
Yeah.
I have seen like there's a little the light, the thing for my ring light, the remote control was sitting on my countertop. I couldn't recognize it, and I flipped out. I was like, "Who's in my house?" I don't need to do that. And I don't need to play horror games.
That's a freaky frame of reality, like reframing of reality. So that must have taken a minute to do, and still, right?
Yeah.
As long as you don't go the way of Darla, you'll be okay.
As long as you're like, I should take a kid to a diner.
Yeah, like, as long as you don't do anything like that, you should be fine. Cool. But no, I am the horror fan on this side of the podcast. She is the more dark fantasy. But I think we were arguing though that I think there is some horror and some dark fantasy though. I think the difference though is that there's rules I think that isn't in horror. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jason just appearing somewhere. versus, you know, you're battling an evil witch. Well, there's rules to her magic and stuff like that. So it's a little bit different. And then also a guy in a hockey mask can actually appear somewhere. So I get why that might not work. It works for me, though. It definitely works for me.
He likes
it. Yeah, me too.
Goodness. Well, that is...
No, sorry. I was just saying, I just don't like
it. No, go ahead. Sorry.
I prefer to be scared. If I'm telling you, if we go to a movie, which I can't do anymore, but if we go to the movies to watch a scary movie, I am the person cracking jokes so that I'm not scared. I'm the person making everybody laugh in the theater because I don't enjoy being scared. I have no desire to be scared.
That's how you protect yourself.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm going to get you to watch at least one horror film. I'm going to get you to do it.
Yeah. Just one of these times.
And I want to know what it is, and I want the live stream reaction to it.
Yes.
Like, I want to see Tess watch Smile and just be like, I'm
"Oh no!" So it, I wouldn't do that. That's that. But oh, Tess, you did. So you do get points. You did see the Black Phone.
I saw the Black Phone.
You did watch the Black Phone for our interview.
How did that work out?
It was fine. It was just doable. It was doable and I was doing it for work. Okay. I mean, I was doing it for an assignment. Okay. There's a professional element to it. Okay. And so therefore I sat down and said, you know what? But it was also much more more suspense than thriller. Didn't I mention that when we had the conversation? I felt more more thriller than horror. Like it was, you know, more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I, like I said, one of the biggest problems with horror for me is things that could be real and that mess with my, that put my mind in a different state. And for example, it's hard to explain, but there are some things that just are too, they rely on the brain not being able to process something. And so then the brain just goes crazy and starts making stuff up. Mm-hmm. That's what bothers me. That's why I think some of the ghost things, like for example, The Orphanage and some of the like more religious ones used to really, really get me because there were things that I really thought could happen. Yeah. And then I was young. I mean, the Blair Witch got me. I grew up in the woods, so the Blair Witch really messed me up because I grew up in the... Come on, man.
The Blair Witch was great.
Campaign still.
Yes.
I'm not convinced Josh Leonard today is the same Josh Leonard from many years, like, and Heather. I'm not convinced those people are the same ones in the because that was the first viral marketing campaign. It was like, oh, no, this really happened. These people are gone. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Putting it out in theaters, I still am convinced that shit is real.
It's real.
That movie freaked me out. I had watched, you know, all the Nightmare on Elm Streets, all the Friday the 13th. And I, because of the marketing and because in the back of your mind, you're like, this could be real. It was like, that really freaked me out. Even though it was, obviously this didn't happen. But the fact that you didn't see them for press releases, you didn't see them like talking about the film. They were kind of like ghosts, like real life ghosts. It was like, wow, they did an amazing job on that. So I understand why, Tess. You get a pass.
Messed up.
Is our show for today. Yes, we got it. We got to get Tess. But no, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. We had a great time chatting with you. Everyone, definitely go check out the Kickstarter. I'm going to put the description, the link and everything in our description so you can check it out. If you're into these type of things, I know if you're not into horror, that might be a little rough, but check it out. They have some pages on there and they have a description on there and it looks cool. I've gotten to read it. And while I can't do a full review, I think it's worth your while. So definitely check that out, especially if you're into the Tales of the Crypt and the Creep Show and things of that nature. Horror, basically. So yeah, if you're listening on YouTube, definitely subscribe, hit that notification bell so you're up on all the new content that's coming out. If you're listening on iTunes or Amazon, subscribe there. Add us to your RSS feeds because again, we're cool. Obviously, we have celebrities stopping by. We have to be a little bit cool. Like 10% more cool than we were yesterday. All right. Hell at the very least.
Celebrities make everything cooler, obviously.
Exactly. Right.
I know you're not talking about me. I just have a dirty sweatshirt on. I'm just hanging out talking about movies and dark fantasy, but
well, no,
I'm not
no.
in this category.
No, definitely. You, all the people we had on the cast, definitely, you know, are special because you guys are busy. Like,
yeah.
you know, just, you know, and not to, we talked to, you know, David F. Sandberg in the midst of him filming or, you know, in Shazam too, and wow. how busy he was mm-hmm. and how we had to, you know, push the date back and stuff like that, but he still came on. And so we really, really, really appreciate it because we know you guys are really, really busy yeah, and we're not the hugest platform, you dig? So we definitely appreciate it. It's not a small thing for us. But again, please follow, please retweet and all that good stuff. Yeah, that's it for housekeeping.
Yeah, that's pretty it.
Thank you so, so much.
Any final words?
It's no small thing. It's no small thing for anyone on any platform with any show, yours or otherwise, to take the time to like thoughtfully talk through it, review it, post about it. It's a two-way street, like quote unquote celebs or like direct filmmaker celebrities, as I call myself, internet celebrity DM. Couldn't do it without fans. Couldn't do it without reviewers, critics, podcasts. We just couldn't get the word out without folks who, you know, folks like you. So two way street. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Appreciate it. That's it for us guys. We will see you hopefully next week. Until then, wear your mask. Be kind. Don't be a dick. # wash your hands, wash your faces, wash your butts. And that's it, y'all. Bye.